Sticker and sleeve. Sticker and sleeve.
Welcome, everyone.
You are listening to the third installment.
Yeah.
Of the Harvest Records podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does installation work too?
I think it might have to be installment.
Yeah. I like it. I like it either way. It's going to be a great episode either way. Here we are. Yep. Sticker and Sleeve is the Harvest Records podcast coming at you. Not live. From
live to us right now.
That's right. We are live. We are in an undisclosed location in Five Points, mm-hmm. near North Asheville,
mm-hmm.
North Carolina.
Yeah.
The LA Dreamhouse Studios. We've got Colin Miller, our engineer, texting, not paying attention to us.
Unreal.
As per usual.
Unreal.
But yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone who's listened to the first couple episodes. I feel good about where we're at.
Yeah.
I've had some really good times with you, Annalise.
Likewise.
Yeah. I think we're starting to come into our own with feeling comfortable with microphones in front of our face.
For sure. It's real close.
Yeah, because, you know, it's tricky. Like, we're together, you know, multiple days a week in the shop, mm-hmm. and, like, riffing all day. Matt Ryan, the whole crew.
Right.
And there's music playing, and we're real comfortable, and we're in our zones. Mm-hmm. And so then we're like, we can be fun on a podcast together.
Right.
And then we get here and it's like, oh.
Right. There's an added pressure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm feeling good. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason I'm feeling good today is that I'm sipping espresso, which I haven't done. I've only done a couple times in the last 2.5 months.
Yeah. It's great.
So if I'm zinging too hard and talking too much, let me know.
It might be a competition because I'm on my second Americano in the span of just a couple hours.
What about before that? Did you wake up?
This is actually it for the
That's
day.
That's it for the
yeah.
day. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Otherwise, this would be an entirely different podcast.
What's your coffee, typical like coffee experience every day?
I like to have when I wake up like a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I'm definitely someone who wakes up and I'm like, where is the
it?
Coffee?
Yeah.
Kind of ritualistically, but I'll usually have one first thing in the morning and then sometimes a second one in the morning or the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Usually there's a second cup of coffee in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. It just depends where I want it.
Yeah. What about when you know you've got a 10 to 2 DJ session coming up at night, 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. to 2 a.m. and you know, it's like 7 and you're dragging ass.
If it's 7, I will rest or just try to take it easy. If it's
catnap?
Yes, once in a while it'll be a catnap, mm-hmm. or just kind of do something that's either low energy or high enough energy that it gets me going again.
Yeah.
But yeah, usually I wouldn't choose to caffeinate at that time, but I will have caffeine again around like 9:30.
What's the form that it comes in?
Usually that would be a highball.
Okay.
You're like, I knew this one.
I knew this was coming, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah. So that's, I definitely have become more and more strategic about that because at some point in the day, I'm like, okay, if I'm dragging right now, I need water, not caffeine.
Right. Right. Totally.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Matt, our beloved Matt, my business partner, is coming up soon. He'll talk to us about
his caffeine intake.
Yeah, pretty much. He's making his debut on Sticker and Sleeve. And then we'll also have John Henry Gloin of the Serpent and Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Serpent and the Rainbow?
Serpent and the Rainbow is my understanding.
Right. And he's just a wild man and a longtime customer of ours and friend. And we're excited to talk to him.
Great dude.
Oh, and also, we sort of didn't clamor for this last time, But if you have any ideas about what you want to see in this or hear in this podcast, who you'd want us to talk to locally, internationally, whatever, sort of anything, we're just open to whatever you guys think or are interested in, because you know our whole purpose of setting this up is because we think that the record store world that we have, that Harvest has created, is pretty fun and interesting, and like we just kind of want to share it with people and go and go beyond even, you know, what new releases are or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
just like what it's like to live in our world. And a lot of you guys are in that world, or but if you're more curious about anything, any direction you'd like to see the podcast go at any point, we're
pretty
all ears.
Into it. Yeah.
Yeah. AK.
Yes.
Do you want to talk movies for a sec?
Sure. Let's talk movies. Okay. It's a good time to talk movies.
I think so. Because it's sort of, we're in the midst of
a really good period of films coming out.
Yeah. So just the other night, we saw, in a small group of us, we saw Parasite, new Korean film. Annalise, what would you, I'm not going to ask for your official rating necessarily, but are you in the camp of, are you kind of like, this is my movie of the year so far?
Well, I walked out of that movie definitely feeling, well, once I took a little time to process it, put it in that camp of this is of my favorite films of the year. But since then, have been thinking about other things that I've seen. Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah,
I forgot that it was even this year.
Right.
So since then, I've remembered all of these other great films, which is actually nice because it really makes me feel like we're in such a film renaissance.
For sure.
So yeah, but I love Parasite, and I do think it's one of the best films I've seen this year, or my favorites.
You want to talk about it?
Sure. Well, what did you think of it, first of all?
I really enjoyed it. I can't say I wasn't like so emotional. I guess if I'm going to call something like an absolute masterpiece for me, I probably need to be invested a little more emotionally in the characters. Granted, I felt for a lot of those characters. It wasn't cold. It wasn't a cold movie to me. I don't know. Maybe just because the main characters, the family, they're sort of rotten, and that's sort of the point. Is like, I don't know. I don't know how to talk about it. It's not the point of the movie, but certainly like the film obviously is about class,
right?
Or really speaks about class, at least in Seoul, Korea, where it's shot. But even like amongst the what you see as sort of the lower classes, like they even clash in this way that becomes really selfish. So it's like showing selfishness on a lot of different levels, it seems to me, would you say? And so it was hard for me to have, like, there weren't real, would you think that there were heroes in that movie? You know what I mean? Like real protagonists. I mean, that family, we follow them, but.
Right. I see what your point is about how there are sort of cracks shown in all of the characters, but I sort of felt less that, not that that wasn't the fault of the characters, but that the villain wasn't an individual. The villain was class hierarchy.
Like, the structure of society.
And the ways that the characters, like the cracks were shown in the characters, seemed to be when they were faced with that hierarchy. I'm trying to like figure out how to talk about this with no spoiler alerts,
but I know, it's tricky.
I do feel like it, I still had such empathy for all of the characters because they, each of them sort of was in a position that they had very little control over, but there was so much pressure on their situations that they were just kind of doing the best they could.
Right.
And using the tools they had learned to get by. I don't know.
Totally.
I really found what I like where you're saying you didn't see a hero. What I kind of thought was interesting is that there was no villain as a person.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because you kind of think at first that you're going to hate the the rich family, that the centerpiece is this rich family's home, and you think you're going to hate them, but then really like you're saying, like everyone is under their own level of pressure, in one way or another. So you can sort of empathize with everyone. And you don't really hate anyone. That's true. I agree.
And yeah, everyone just kind of falls to capitalism.
Right. I know. Down,
I was like, down. How do I not say the word? Can I get away with not saying it?
Real fast, Jojo Rabbit, you liked it?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Did you?
Loved it, yeah. I love that guy's movies, Taika Waititi. I love him in general. Mm-hmm. And yeah, a lot of great movies. I don't know. We've been some movie going fools.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I mean, The Lighthouse was just a couple weeks ago,
exactly,
too.
Exactly. Right.
Unreal.
And then I've watched John Wick 1 and 2 recently. So
you're like, all these other movies are fine.
Yeah.
But
John Wick 1 really did win me over in a way that I'm not normally won over by movies like that. John Wick 2, not so much. But anyway, everyone, welcome Matt Schnabel to the house.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's your debut on Sticker and Sleeve.
Feels good.
Yeah. Happy to have you, Matt. As many of you know, but maybe not everyone knows, is my business partner here, mm-hmm. co-owner of Harvest Records, co-founder. We were friends and we were friends.
Once
in
upon
college.
A time.
That's it, though.
In college. And then... we opened the store in 2004, moved here, and here we are, still kicking it. Here's a question for both of you guys. Mm-hmm. What is your routine, if you have one? What is your stance on music mm-hmm. while you go to bed, while you sleep? Do you listen to music when you go to sleep? Have you ever in your life?
I used to listen to the same CD.
Yeah.
Port Royal Flares. Every single night, I think for like a year, mm-hmm. maybe 2 years. I don't know what this would have been, like 06, mm-hmm. 07.
Yeah.
Something like that. But now I don't.
Nothing.
I have an air purifier.
There you go.
Yeah.
I love that. I don't right now. But I do sometimes, I mean, if I'm, I have before.
Yeah.
And usually like, I mean, anything in the sort of Boards of Canada world, yeah. I feel like that's music. That's great.
Something
to sort of
maybe lyricless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Chill.
Yeah. I definitely have had nights where even falling asleep to something like that and it goes into play mode and waking up the next morning and it's still something in that world, I'm like, I don't hate this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I don't do it a whole
You're
lot.
You're like, oh, wow, now it's on Coldplay's electronic era, but that's perfect.
It's like the one way that I'm okay with, like, okay, yeah, I got to Coldplay, but really it was just in my sleep, but I didn't make the decision.
Right, right. I still try to listen to music when I sleep. Not all the time, but I'm still open to it. It also will change with a partner, obviously, if you're sleeping in bed with someone's kind of got to make that decision together. Typically.
Yeah. Right. I think that's where I've never introduced it to someone else as like a, hey, let's listen to music.
Yeah.
But
the
I
reason
like I, to on my own.
I thought about this is because when we opened, Matt and I lived in a one-bedroom apartment upstairs from the record store back in 2004, 2005, and we slept in the same room as if we were a dorm mate, mm-hmm. roommate. And,
did we listen to music?
I think we did, because I feel like we used to... I was thinking about that. I was like, I remember like a Rachel's CD.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe even like a Godspeed or Godspeed offshoot.
That sounds
about
almost
right.
Feel like you
I
and
forgot
I,
about that.
I almost feel like we would like... I'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to choose the music tonight.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know how long
that
lasted, but...
That's incredible.
We don't live together anymore.
We still listen to the Rachels.
Yeah. So we've got Black Friday coming up right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Holiday time.
Right.
And we're excited about it. And, Let's just like preview what sort of Record Store Day Black Friday is for those of you unaware. So if you know about Record Store Day, that's traditionally in April. It's been going on for over 10 years now, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
And the idea is driving customers to independent record stores where we carry dozens and dozens of limited releases, things that have never been out before, blah, blah, blah. Just things to drive traffic to the store. Unique releases released only that day.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past few years, Record Store Day as an organization has started to do sort of like a part two mini version of Record Store Day on Black Friday, which I think it's been really great. Mm-hmm. It's been helpful. Black Friday, traditionally for like an independent store, isn't necessarily our bread and butter.
Yeah.
Right. You know, people end up, I guess they still go to Best Buy and stuff. I don't really know.
I guess. I don't know.
Walmart, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's great. We have people line up early and drive sometimes a few hours to come get these special releases.
Right. And it has a very different vibe than the times I have been to more traditional Black Friday type experiences, which is really nice.
What's different about it?
I mean, it's just an independent, smaller store.
No trampling.
No trampling. Everyone still has the sort of vibe that the store typically has. It's just that, you know, plus some energy, I feel. Mm-hmm. Which is nice.
Right.
It's just, friendly. No one's like needs to get the biggest TV first.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even though there are a limited number of some of these releases, I feel like I've seen people before even say, you know what?
Like, yeah, take here you go.
If you want that more, let me have that.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, if you haven't experienced it, either Record Store Day or Black Friday at Harvest or, any other independent store, it's definitely worth checking out. Mm-hmm. You might find something you like. No pressure, of course, but we'd love to see you that day. We can talk about a few of the things that are coming out this year. One that I'll just kick it off with.
Kick it off.
Which is, of course, with Pearl Jam Unplugged, which has never been on vinyl. If many of you might remember this legendary performance from, I think, in 1992. But I'm a big Pearl Jam fan. Unashamed, and it's great. It's a great set, early stuff, 10 era, and it's rare, and we got about half of the copies we ordered, so it's going to be...
Yeah. It'll be a hot item. It's going to go fast.
Yeah.
Right.
So come out.
Does it say how limited that one is?
Well, Annalise looked it up today. It's 13,000.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Which is insane. Mm-hmm. So the ordering was probably like 25... I mean... Yeah, there were probably like 20,000 to 30,000 units ordered, based on what we got,
right.
Like our allocation. So
yeah,
right, good math.
What else we got? What else are we gonna have? Big ones.
Yeah, we should rattle off stuff. Mm-hmm.
Fish
story. What is
story of the ghost?
Story of the ghost.
Never. No, that has been on vinyl.
I think it's remastered, numbered. Lizzo,
Cardi B's first mixtape.
Yep, that's gonna
What's
be
the Lizzo. It's an
early
EP,
I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
early EP.
Steep Canyon Rangers, like local heroes cover record. I think it's all NC songs that they're playing on that, which is cool.
Yeah, I saw that, like Elizabeth Cotton and
exactly. So that'll be a cool release for the folks in town. A couple of Miles Davis releases. Mm-hmm. Let's see, rare tracks from Silent Way Sessions, a live set in Tokyo. What you got, Annalise?
I got Bootsy Collins.
Oh, the Bootsy thing is like when, like right, like that's the JBs essentially.
Right.
It's like right when they were joining up with James Brown.
Yeah, something sounds right.
Yeah, it's that demo.
It's a demo that they like gave to James Brown. Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. That's that's it.
Sick.
Yeah.
I bet it's banging.
It's hot.
What do we got? Jimi Hendrix Christmas picture disc for all those completists out there.
I mean, every Record Store Day and Black Friday, they find
a Jimi Hendrix something. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That Eden album, Beauty and the Beat.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great one.
That was an early favorite of Harvest. It came out mid 2000s at some point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if we ever fell asleep listening to it.
it's too upbeat.
It's too rocky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff coming
out.
It'd
be fun. Matt, what are your thoughts on Black Friday? Like, how do you get geared up for it? Does it stress you out? How do you feel about it? Let's like insider scoop. Mm-hmm. Harvest Records insider.
It doesn't stress me out.
Good.
It used to.
Yeah.
I think both Record Store Day and Black Friday used to be very, did we order enough?
Yeah.
Like that was always stuff we stressed about and making sure that we got enough for the customers. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're trying to get inside people's brains. Yeah. Like what are they going to want? And I think when it first started, we just maybe didn't know what people were looking for. And it was a bit of a crapshoot. But now it's, I think we're pretty good at estimating numbers. And
we also have 10 years of history of people not being really mad if they don't get something.
Exactly.
Like, generally, our customers are always kind and understanding and, you know.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. So now you have to just get into a zen, like work more zen about it.
Yeah. I mean, I get stressed about having enough used, like fresh used product for the floor. That's what I do stress about. So I just try to price as much as possible.
Yeah. Because people will get really upset at you.
They get pissed. You get emails, tons of comment cards.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I like it. It's usually good energy. People are excited to find stuff. And, right. Have a brew.
Oh, yeah. You know? Free beer.
Yeah.
We still just got free beer lying around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess worth saying for anyone listening, Matt always puts out a ton of new used material on the floor, which is what he's talking about, pricing all those records.
Yeah.
In addition to the exclusive releases, just lots of used stuff you could come get.
Yeah. You know, what release we didn't mention were those 3-inch Disney.
What are they?
3-inch records.
They're records. Okay.
I think last year they did...
The Third Man.
Or like Crosley did a 3-inch record player. And so they did...
Foo Fighters?
Yeah, Foo Fighters sounds right. Like maybe a White Stripes 3-inch record and some other stuff. So that happened this past Record Store Day, I believe. So now they're just keeping it going with other 3-inch records, which is crazy.
But this stack that we got in
is all Disney movies.
Yeah, so
Lion King.
It's like Aladdin. When you wish upon a star, kind of.
Yeah.
Bump some Little Mermaid on your 3-inch record. Hey, yeah,
that'd be sick. Is it Under the Sea? Is it Kiss the Girl? Do we know which?
Those are both bangers.
I think it's Under the Sea. Shit, what is it? I don't know. I mean,
come in and find out on Black Friday.
Come in and find out.
We got you.
You kind of can't go wrong. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
and then, you know, just to plug that the rest of that weekend, we can talk real fast about the next day, Small Business Saturday, November 30th. We're going to do 10% off everything in the store, and we're going to open up the basement. Everything's a quarter.
11 to 6, for the basement.
For the basement, right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Come out, see us, get some stuff.
Yeah.
Support your local businesses.
Yeah, and you know, especially in our neighborhood now, we have so much more retail than we ever have. We've got Bagatelle Books, we've got Flora, we've got
Whist,
Second Gear.
Yeah, just park somewhere and just walk around. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Come say hi. If you don't want to buy anything, you don't have to. Just come in and say hi,
and even have a free beer and leave.
Yeah.
Maybe. Just kidding.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
We want you to do whatever you want out there.
All right. Do you guys want to do a little This Week in Harvest History?
Harvest Rec History. Harvest Rec History. Get you a look. Get you a look. Harvest
Thank you very much to Casey Ellis, who provided our theme music for This Week in Harvest History. We also failed to mention last week that those sound bites include the late, great Donnie Lloyd.
R.I.P. Love him so much.
Yeah, we miss him. Get You a Look is a real good one. Those are from... the commercial, the Harvest commercial that we made one time with Donnie from years back. So it's just on YouTube. I think you can just search Donnie Lloyd Harvest and it'll pop up.
So
it's
good.
It's worth a watch.
Yeah. So This Week in Harvest History is a series a section of the podcast that we're going to just highlight something that has happened in Harvest past. most of which will be centered around shows that we booked in the past, as we used to book and promote shows, and like Harvest Records presents X band at X venue. The one we're going to talk about today, November 22nd, 2006, we had Joanna Newsom at the Diana Wortham Theater.
Incredible show!
What a show!
Incredible memory.
Do you remember the opener?
Alistair Roberts.
That's right. Nailed it. Another Drag City artist.
Yep.
Matt, what do you remember about that show?
I don't remember a ton. I remember being nervous, very nervous, because I feel like that was like one of the first bigger, like that was the biggest show we had done by far.
Totally.
And we hadn't done like downtown, like at a really nice venue. It felt like the first time we were like professional show promoters.
I agree.
Nothing against, like, we had done shows at the Grey Eagle and stuff like, and the Wedge Gallery, and those were professional, quote unquote.
But this one felt like a level up.
Yeah. We were dealing with like union workers, mm-hmm. and it was just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But it sold out. Mm-hmm. And I definitely remember roses being thrown on the stage at the end of the show.
That's right.
Which was amazing. And I remember before Joanna and crew went on stage, they all chanted, "Release the bats." So there's that.
What's that about?
I don't know, but it was cool and kind of freaky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was on the Ease tour.
That sounds right.
I think. Because then, she released that Ease Street Band thing, EP or whatever, the live thing.
Yeah.
And it was with that band. In my research for This Week in Harvest History, I'm trying to go through our list of bands that we promoted shows for, which is like a few hundred bands.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like bringing up these memories like, oh yeah, there was that band I never heard of before and I never saw again that opened for so-and-so or whatever. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to do with Matt is I got three examples of name that headliner. So I'm going to say the opening act.
Okay.
You don't have to say when or whatever, but
I'll tell you the day of the week.
But who do they open for? I got a couple softballs, and maybe they're all softballs.
We'll see.
All right. You already got Alasdair Roberts. You already knew that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Male bonding.
Wait, so... Oh, was that... was that at a not the Grey Eagle?
Right. Yeah, no, it could be any venue.
Was that at... DeSoto Lounge?
Yes.
Mm.
The only show I think we ever did.
Right.
And they played with Dum Dum Girls.
Boom.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That was a good one.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was so loud in there.
It was incredibly loud.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That was a killer show.
Yeah, it was awesome. Dum Dum Girls, man.
Yeah. So good.
All right, here's one. I don't know if it's a softball or not. I think it is, but might throw you off a little. Former guest on our podcast, Greg Cartwright, solo.
Legend. He's a legend.
Yeah. As an opener, solo.
Oh, man.
Here's a hint. It was at the Grey Eagle.
Okay. Well, it wasn't Sharon Jones, because that was full band.
Exactly. That was Raining Sound.
Second year anniversary. I don't know.
Here's a hint that might give it away. He then played with the headliner.
Oh, Rodriguez.
Yes.
Yes.
You got it.
Nice.
That was in 2009. We did a Rodriguez show.
Yes. And good call.
I played bass in that too. Fire Zouave.
Oh. Of Montreal.
Yes.
Wow.
Nice job. We did multiple shows, the Grey Eagle for Of Montreal.
Yeah. It's all a blur.
It's all a blur.
Yeah.
Various openers.
That was good. Yeah.
One funny thing about Montreal shows at the Grey Eagle is we know that Ryan was at all of them, but
yes.
We didn't really
huge
know
fan.
Ryan then.
Oh,
but yeah.
Huge fan.
Even like putting, I don't know, when Montreal fans would put like glitter on and shit.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, he did that.
Ryan even was rocking
getting
that.
Dressed up. I love it. It's great.
I love that.
Huge. Our beloved
I
Ryan
been at early
Harvest
ones
Struckers,
as well, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see Fire Zouave?
I don't know, actually.
I don't remember that. Anything about that band. I hope they're not listening.
Yeah. Thank you for playing.
Yeah, thank you, Fire Zouave. You're just as important as Joanna Newsom to us,
absolutely.
To our history.
Absolutely.
That was This Week and Other Weeks in Harvest History. Cool. You feel good about it? I feel good about Matt's section.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel good about
it.
Thanks for
great.
Having me.
Thanks, Matt.
Hey, thanks for thinking of me, y'all.
Yeah.
Good luck, John Henry.
Sticker and Sleeve.
And we're back.
We're back with John Henry.
Don't sound too excited.
I know, right? We're back with John Henry. John Henry Gloin.
Unfortunately.
He's a famous tattoo artist.
Truly.
Locally famous. Regionally, and internationally, nationally.
Internationally. You've traveled internationally to tattoo.
A Euro tour. We'll get to that.
Yep.
You're legit famous. You're actually too famous.
Yeah.
Awkward.
John Henry Gloin is a good friend of ours. He is a longtime customer and associate of Harvest Records. He's had multiple art shows in the store. Mm-hmm. You know, worked on Haywood Road for many, many years.
Shopped in the small shop.
Like before we expanded?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Totally. You were there. You were there.
Actually, that was where my art show was. It was in the small shop.
Yeah, it was when it was just half. Yeah.
Yeah.
The first one, anyway. Yeah. JH is, you know, like... You're a real part of the fabric of Harvest Records. I'm not just saying that. Like, you really are like a very early. I mean, let's be honest. You spent a lot of money in the store, so that you're part of the fabric in that way. But just like your personality, and you know, obviously we're all friends at this point. And
it's weird too, because I obviously like I've been reflecting on that since you like. I was like, what are we even gonna talk about?
Yeah.
So you like, I was like, just thinking about I've. Spent a lot of time in there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think there's a lot to talk about, which you don't even have to prepare for. It's just like we've got a lot of history.
Yeah. And I mean, even to think like I'm an adult now, have kids and a mortgage and all this shit. And I was just like a little shithead kid in there.
I know, right?
You know?
I know.
So I was like, that's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Because what was that, 15 years ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's just start off with that, actually. What do you remember the first time you came into Harvest? Because So everyone knows John Henry grew up in Cherokee. So you're from Western North Carolina.
Yep.
What point did you make it into Harvest? Do you remember the first time you came?
Growing up in Cherokee, I had some friends, and you either had to go to Manifest in Greenville if you wanted something good, or Green Eggs in Asheville. Mm-hmm. And then Green Eggs obviously turned into Static Age. I was kind of like, well... I'll go try out this other place.
Yeah.
It was a big deal to me.
Yeah. You know what I mean? For sure.
And so, anyways, I was just like, that was it. When I started liking you guys is when you turned me on 3 records, which was Great Lake Swimmer's second record.
Okay.
Bought them all the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Sun Kill Moons, Ghost of the Highway.
Oh, yeah.
And Ryan Adams Cardinals.
Jacksonville City Knights? No.
Cold
Roses?
Cold Roses, yeah.
Got it, yeah.
And I bought all those 3 on the same day right before I was going on a trip to California. I downloaded them on my iPod and I listened to them the whole way there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would check the CD book, clicked so I could like look at the lyrics like, you know, on the plane.
That. Love that.
But talk about 3 records to like ride a plane to, like those are perfect.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know.
And so you remember that from their first time in the shop?
No, honestly, I don't know if that was the first time the shop, but I mean, it was the first time you guys like recommended something to me.
Yeah.
And I was like...
And then you were like, okay, totally. This is cool.
I wouldn't have got those records at Static Age.
Anywhere else, yeah, know? Totally.
So mm-hmm. It was like, it was definitely a shift too with me like not listening to as much hardcore and punk for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just getting into more of that, which I was always into music like that, but I definitely ignored music like that for a long time.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, obviously... You know, you eventually, hopefully, pull your head out of your ass and start doing other stuff. So.
Right.
Can you talk about growing up in Cherokee? What I'm really curious about is what was it like finding music in Cherokee? I know you just said the different stores you would have to drive to, but like even beyond that, or before you would go somewhere, what was it like? Like older siblings, like blah, blah. Was it hard to get hear about interesting things in Cherokee, or was it all right?
It was hard to get stuff from Cherokee, but I was completely spoiled with a cool sister.
Mm.
That's right.
Very
crucial.
Who was like, I'm talking like, you know, half of that bookcase, like CDs stacked, just like good, like
that's awesome.
College rock. Thinking back to it, it was like, it was hits after hits. Mm-hmm. It was just all this great music. But also like, did a bad record come out in 1994? You know, it's like.
I'm with you, man.
Yeah.
Speaking my language.
Yeah.
Everything was good, man.
Yeah. So, extremely easy for me, and it was definitely just like, and it was before I even like got real crazy about like punk and hardcore. Like, it was like all that college rock stuff is what I listened to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jane's Addiction,
mm-hmm.
Smiths, Ramones, Pixies were gigantic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
CD. She had Doolittle. Doolittle was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I remember those four because those four is like a really great. Oh, Teenage Fan Club, Bandwagon-esque. It was all like kind of covers too. Like, it's like, well, that's a cool cover.
Totally.
You know?
Exactly.
I mean, I was like fifth grade, like really like listening intently to this stuff.
Right. That's great, man. I don't want to say you lucked out, but it is nice. I had an older sister that got me into cool stuff. You are the older sister that probably got your little brother.
I don't know. I feel like he was not trying to listen to what I had.
He's like avoiding what you were saying.
He's like, the Pokemon soundtrack is actually way more interesting.
But then there's like one thing in Cherokee too is like I was adventurous enough to like, let's go to Asheville just for music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
We didn't even eat.
Right.
You know? Like, and it was a time when like you're like squeezing, you know, $30 out of your mom.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
And like you're not gonna spend it on food at all. Right. It's like
you're gonna hopefully get two CDs out of that. Yeah.
But you could go to Circuit City, Nashville.
Oh right.
And they'd have random ass $3 CDs in there. I brought Bad Brains Roar Session in there for $3.
Uh huh.
So I mean it was just like we'd go there just to check.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Would you go to shows in Asheville?
Vincent's here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seen La Tigra there. It was amazing.
Oh, nice.
Cool. Yeah. Tammy Hart opened with the, what are they called? The Butchies?
Yeah. The Butchies. Yeah. I think that's right.
But fucking La Tigra was insane.
That's like, cool.
They
that's
were awesome. Fucking insanely good.
How old do you think you were?
14.
God.
That's so cool.
Love that.
Totally.
It's fun hearing about you sort of as a kid in record stores because how you still come in is like picking things up, looking at a cover, like, what's this? Like every 5 seconds, it's something else and you want to know.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
That's true, yeah.
Like no matter what, you want to know what everything is. Yeah. And it makes sense that you were that way as a kid.
It drives me. And it's all like aesthetic artifact finding.
Sure. Stuff,
mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, even records you don't even like, they like look cool. And like, you'll hold on to it for whatever reason.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, not to get like old guy fucking soapbox thing about music experience now compared to those days, but like you would buy, maybe you would spend your $30 on these two CDs and you're like, okay, this is what I'm going to get and like, cool. And then you take one of them home and you're like, I don't like this.
Right.
What, like for whatever reason you bought it, but then you don't like it. But then you like just stick with it.
Totally.
And then maybe on your 15th listen, because you bought it, you fucking might as well listen to
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And then you're like, oh, actually, no, this is really good. It grows on you, whatever.
Yeah.
And it just feels
tougher. Think about that a lot, where it's like there's some records, Afghan Whigs, one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Got it young.
Didn't quite get it at
first. Quite get it. Yeah. It was a little, you know, and again, when you want something real aggressive, and it's like kind of this like hip swinging rock record, uh-huh. It's like, mm-hmm. No, you know, it's like not what you...
Sure.
Not what you wanted.
But you're a fan now.
But I'm a huge fan now.
Yeah.
But again, it's like when you only have 5 albums and then...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, well... I'll
play it, we'll listen to it.
You get bored enough to just play it.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And I can't think of... I know Afghan Whigs. I'm sure, I mean, I know there's plenty.
There's
but now at this point, you learn. Just set it over here. Come back to it.
Come back to it. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it'll eventually make sense.
Yeah.
Because usually if you don't like it, you know that immediately.
Right.
But if it's just in this weird gray area.
Totally.
You mm-hmm. kind of just like keep it around.
I'll come back mm-hmm. to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But usually, and it's usually like, I'll come back to this and love it later. You know you will.
Uh-huh.
Almost. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Right.
But I'm also like, I'm just obsessed with music, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And like what you were just talking about with grabbing stuff and you're talking about the artifacts, like still attracted to the album art.
Mm-hmm.
The still, that's like the first thing.
Packaging,
yeah.
Way it feels. Even that magazine you had over there, that uh-huh. Arkansas.
Oxford American. Yeah.
The texture.
I know.
It was
great,
like,
man.
Nuts. Yeah. I was like, I want this.
Yeah. Watch out. He's going to leave with it.
Yeah.
I know. I'll get you a subscription.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I can remember a couple times even when you've walked up with something, not having ever heard it, just like, I'm going to try it out.
Yeah.
Because it looks cool.
Right.
Absolutely.
I'm like, yeah, sure does.
It's a little bit of a lost art, but people still do it. Mm-hmm. It's nice.
Absolutely.
That, movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of, I don't know. I think aesthetics get real wrapped up into it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because beyond even listening to it, it's still going to sit there.
Right.
Still going to look at it.
Still going to look at it, right.
Yeah.
And that can influence, like you do that first couple listens and you're like, I don't like this music. This doesn't add up with this album cover. But then you stick around and then it adds up.
Absolutely.
And then you mm-hmm. like it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even like with records too, like if you have a record shelf, the way you set it on a wall, you can just set a cool record there.
Uh-huh.
Even if you're not, you know, looking at it, mm-hmm. it's kind of like a painting on your wall.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's just,
On this note, let's talk about your, you know, simultaneous love of art. Obviously, you become a tattoo artist later in your life. So, well, not that much later. You were pretty young when you became a tattoo artist. But anyway, what was your introduction to an obsession with art as a kid? Like, were you constantly drawing? Like, what was your vibe?
Constantly drawing. It all comes down to encouraging mother.
So, yeah, so you're drawing. You're obviously entranced by music and art. And, like, at what point does one make the decision to enter into the tattoo world? Like, what got you into that? I mean, I know that's kind of a boring question, but I am genuinely curious. I don't really know how that would work.
Well, since you asked, I got asked to be a tattoo apprentice in 2001.
Okay.
And as anyone that was,
you're 17 or something.
Yeah. Anyone's of age. I mean, that was like the dark ages almost.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. I'm like, we didn't have a computer at my house.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and now, so me being like barely middle class, we didn't have a computer in rural North Carolina. So, like, no one had one.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Point being, it's just like, no. You weren't being influenced by any kind of social media. It was just like being asked to be a tattooer was like completely out of left field.
Uh huh.
Because now, like, it's almost like a career path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was career suicide.
Right.
You know, it really was.
Yeah.
And my family was like bummed that that's what I was doing.
Right.
My dad was bummed. My aunts were bummed. It was just like some, like, it sounds so corny, but it's just like some, like, outlaw shit. You know, like some prison shit, you know, or whatever. It was totally like degenerate sense stuff.
Right. I mean, of course, I remember that era.
I have a very big love for everything degenerate. So
I was
attracted to the ugly.
To the underworld. Sort
yeah.
Of. And
yeah.
I was going to say, like, you're
I like that aesthetic of, like, some, what's the word I'm looking for? The provocative.
Sure.
Anything kind of.
But what I was going to say is, like, knowing your personality is, and I can see that your family in 2001 would have been like, come on, don't do that. Like, that's the dark side or whatever. But knowing you, I'm like, but you were going to make the most of it. Because you don't you go 110% in everything in your life. And you are a really positive, like, genuinely happy person to be around, and it's really I love being around you, because it's rarely dark. So even though you're going into this very quote unquote dark world,
exactly.
I'm like, Jay, everyone should have known all along you were going to make the most of that. You're going to kill it.
And seriously, once again, encouraging mom.
Yeah,
everyone was bummed, but she was just like, well, if you want to do it, you know, I'll support you.
Cool.
And
that's awesome.
You know,
who was the person that asked you?
The guy that owned the tattoo shop in Cherokee.
Oh, in Cherokee. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, his name was Robin Lambert, but he's an enrolled member of the tribe. Mm-hmm. So he's the one that got me into it.
Because he had seen your drawings?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He came to the high school art show. I went to school with his son. We were the same age. Came to the high school art show and seen, like, some of my drawings, which were just, like, completely, like, lowbrow comic stuff. That's right. What, like, I loved then.
Right.
And I mean, I still love it, but it's, like, really what I was trying to draw then. And he seen that and just asked me it was completely just, like, shocking that he even asked, because I never even thought
that could be a career path.
I can't, like, get across how much in, like, 2001 you didn't set out to be a tattooer unless you were a total weirdo.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I am a total weirdo.
I was like, I'm sorry, what's
yeah,
the point?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but that makes it so weird now is how popular it is now.
Mm-hmm. Everyone has tattoos now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. And but like it's weird now. Like I tattoo like superintendents.
Right.
I tattoo athletic directors,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like cops. You know, it's just like, and I mean, it's weird.
Yeah,
it's weird. Like this weird thing you got into got popular.
Right. You know? Mm-hmm. Totally. You certainly didn't get in it to, that's your point. You didn't get in it to be popular. It wasn't a thing, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a thing, but it wasn't like.
But again, I've always kind of like been like, wherever society is flowing, I'm not going there.
Yeah. Right.
You know, mm-hmm. just because that's just how I genetically was made up. Mm-hmm. I'll make a long story short.
Yeah.
I was 17 when I started my apprenticeship. My boss he was going through some shit. I was 17. Every 17-year-old knows everything.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so, like, obviously we bumped heads. I ended up quitting because I was like, fuck this. I'll just go to art school. And that's what I did. So I quit because I still had my senior year of high school during my apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
And it went south. So I just did all the paperwork to, like, get into art school and got that finished. So I just quit my apprenticeship and went to art school.
What art school?
The Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe.
Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
And anyways, I only went there for a semester and then I came back for like this relationship shit, which obviously didn't work out at all. You know, 17-year-old, 19-year-old bullshit.
You think it's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. But anyways, came back, obviously wasn't in school, so I got a job as a janitor. And I was a janitor for a couple years.
Fucking Goodwill Hunting over here.
And while I was being a janitor, I got back into community college. And then the guys I was working with at the shop I started at, tattoo shop, opened their own shop. And I would just go by there to see them because they were homies. Mm-hmm. And then they eventually were just like, why don't you pick your apprenticeship back up? Mm. And so I did. And right after I did my first tattoo, like, I quit college, like, immediately.
Whoa, really?
Wow. Yeah. I think I finished the semester, but I was just like, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
This is what I'm doing.
Who was the first tattoo?
My buddy, Stan Waddy. He's from Cherokee. That was the first one. But then and it was just black because that was like how the apprenticeship worked. You just do a black tattoo right. first, mm-hmm. No color or anything. But my second color tattoo was on my mom.
No way.
Nice. Yeah. So, I mean, I had been like first five tattoos I ever did, like one of them was on my mom. So it was awesome.
Love but
that.
But
again, really that's how like supportive. And she like pissed off everyone in the family that was like not supporting me. And she was just like, I'm a grown woman. I'll do what the fuck I want.
That's amazing. You know?
Yeah. My mom rolled so hard.
Love her.
My dad rolled too, but like my mom was like obviously encouraging when no one else was being encouraging.
Yeah.
Sure.
Especially on this weird ass thing that I was embarking on.
Right.
Oh man. I got some crazy stories.
Do it.
As soon as I quit college, I start working at the shop in Silva. Not the one you got tattooed at, okay. The one before that. But I start working there, and this is my apprenticeship. I don't know anything about tattooing. I don't know shit. Nothing. And again, it's 2003 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't even think we had... This was in between Cherokee and Silva. This shop was. It was off the reservation, technically in Silva, mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm. right off the 4-lane. We didn't even have the internet there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I mean, that's like... Can you realize, like, it didn't have the internet?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's mind-blowing to think
yeah,
about.
It
yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
People now wouldn't even understand that. But anyways, so I didn't know shit, you know? And it wasn't like I could just, like, Google some shit to see, like, what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You were, like, you had to take this apprenticeship serious if you wanted the knowledge that they were going to give you.
Right.
And so one day I show up for work, and they're, like, in the back, and they're, like, fucking around these Bunsen burners. And I'm just like, sick, they're making ink. Like tattoo ink. I didn't know how to make tattoo ink. I'm going to learn today.
Yeah.
And so he's like fucking got the Bunsen burners out and there's fucking anyways. And I'm like, my face is like right in this shit.
Uh-huh.
And like, it was like some kind of liquid and then like the liquid evaporated and it's just like, he starts scraping all these crystals off. And I'm like, what the fuck? This is wild. And then starts putting them all in these different vials. And then like, then we go over to the microwave and he melts them and like they start turning to liquid, the crystals do. I'm like, whoa, it's so cool. And I was like, I was guessing you like add pigment to this and
right. That's
what you do. And then like just total idiot me. Like it was the first wave of meth coming through Western North Carolina. And I'm not saying it was this dude in particular,
yeah. But
like
yeah. He
was just like, I'd never seen meth in my life.
Yeah. Right.
I've never even been around it, know anyone that did it. Cause it was like, there was not a drug people did around here at the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was cooking meth.
That's insane.
And I didn't know that until like a month later.
So like in that moment, they didn't tell you, no, actually.
They were all laughing at me. They were all laughing at my interest, but I was like, okay.
Yeah, we add pigment to this later, John.
Yeah. I was like, okay, the Raz and the new guy. All right, whatever. Uh-huh. But anyways, it was me and four other guys. I was the apprentice, but like I watched all them dudes like lose their minds. Wow. And they were all like friends.
Yeah.
One of them, a couple of them were good friends. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I watched them all like lose their mind on math. And when like they started like really like losing their mind and things were like getting crazy violent and stuff like that, I told my boss, my friend, like, hey man, like if this keeps going on, like I'm gonna quit, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, it was not long after I told him that I found a bunch of meth in the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
like on the toilet, like there were like lines just waiting on like the next dude to come in and do them or whatever. And I was just like, I packed my stuff up and left.
Yeah.
And I, and again, this is 2000, whatever. And like, I didn't know one soul in the world as far as tattooing goes. So it wasn't
right,
like
that was your only, yeah. they were your only,
that was it.
Contact.
So it
right.
wasn't like I just like DM somebody on Instagram right. to like find right. another shop. Like that's not an option. So I just quit. I remember we lived in this insane party house in Silva. It was like six of us crammed in this old house. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it was like $100 a month. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. it's like totally. That kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Directly across the street from this party house that we lived, out of the fucking blue, this guy from Asheboro, North Carolina, opened a shop.
Oh, right.
And I was like, what the fuck? So, like, I, like, got me and my friends, like, just carry a bunch of my paintings, and we skateboarded over there. And I just, like, I was like, kind of just like begging this dude for a job. It's like, because it was like all tattoo related stuff at this yeah. point. And at this point, I at least had tattoo machines. So it's like, I was really just like getting ready to start. But like, you can see, like, I got some work. And yeah. he was like, well, just bring in a friend, tattoo him, and let me see how you do. Uh-huh. And that's exactly what I did and got the job.
Man. Amazing.
But so from sick. That point, I have nonstop tattooing to this day.
Sticker and sleeve.
Is there a traditional Cherokee music that you were ever into or influenced? Like, is that a thing, or is it more like a thing as a tourist thing? Is it like, was there ever a real part of Cherokee life for you?
A real part of like life for me? No.
Yeah.
I mean, I was listening to fucking
right.
The Smiths.
The Germs.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was like,
and also
that totally is a thing. And well, that's crazy. Is like, it's like depressing, you know, when you get to the like reality of it, which is starting with my grandparents' generation, they tried to step away from anything ceremonial because they were trying to be
to assimilate
right. exactly
right.
So a lot of these people quit teaching their kids things.
Wow.
Because they wanted them to succeed in America,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And they viewed, like, sticking with the old traditions as not moving forward and succeeding.
Right. So a lot of it wasn't teaching both. It was just teaching you the assimilation part.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so point being is, like, even my age group coming up, like, there wasn't a lot of that going on in Cherokee. There was a little bit, of course, mm-hmm. but not a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like now, as we're getting older and coming a lot more conscious of like colonization kind of things, mm-hmm. it's like we want it back.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more of it now in Cherokee, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Like even I went to Swain Elementary off the reservation and it was awful. Like it was awful. Uh-huh. It was completely fucking like traumatizing.
Uh-huh.
But, traumatizing for me because I know there's other Cherokee kids that went there and had a fine time, but mm-hmm. I wasn't one of them. Anyways, but I just found out, like, Amber went down there 2 weeks ago, and at Swain Elementary, they taught a Cherokee language class. They had a Cherokee language. They had a Cherokee day
uh-huh.
where, like, Cherokees would come in with, like, regalia, like, what we'd wear.
This is now?
Yeah. This was just, right. like, a couple weeks ago. And, like, that shit never would have fucking happened when I was in school.
Right.
And it wasn't so much I had bad times with students, but it was like the shit like teachers were saying about Indians.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Even there.
Yeah. And again, for whatever reason, I was like, for whatever reason, just born a little more like turned on to things and knowing like something's lame or something's cool or something's not.
Something
cool
off.
Or something's yeah. fucked yeah. up, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whatever. But like, I remember being like fifth grade, just like this teacher saying shit, and I'm just like, this isn't right.
Right.
Yeah.
But you're in fifth grade. You don't know how to like stand up for yourself, or you don't even know to speak up to tell her to shut up.
Right.
You know?
Well, and also there's a system in place where if you were to speak up, you know, who's really going to defend you?
Exactly. And I'm just going to go to the principal's office right. and be in trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're probably already in there enough, weren't you?
Yeah. When I was in elementary school there, we did not have a casino.
Right.
And now we are the richest county in North Carolina.
Wow.
So I'm sure, as much as I want to say they're being tolerant now, mm-hmm. no, we just have money now.
Right.
Wow.
And that's you view dark. Everyone, it is dark. Yeah. And you view everyone with money different.
Mm-hmm.
And you view everyone without money different. And it's just odd that we've been literally 180 on both sides of that.
Totally.
Where to yeah. now we're like, people will like kiss your ass and be like, yeah, come like dance. At our school.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we might ask you for money down the road.
Right.
And that's just a fucking... I'm just assuming, but
I mean,
they weren't doing that shit when we didn't have a casino.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how much it traumatized me.
Really?
Yeah, totally. Just like racism. Just fucking, you know, like really dealing with it.
At what point in your life do you think, like you just said a minute ago, like I didn't realize at the time like how much it kind of haunted me mm-hmm. or has haunted me. At what point do you think you really started to grapple with that? And how do you grapple with it?
I think it definitely always like fucked with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like just in my 20s, you're going to live forever. You're 20, you're like mm-hmm. You don't reflect like that.
Yeah.
And I would definitely say after having kids in my early 30s, when it was like, and I got sober.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which obviously, like, once you get sober, you really start to deal with your issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't hide behind being drunk or being hungover. Because if you're hungover, all you care about is being hungover,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
So, kids and my sobriety, yeah. So it had been about 3 years where it's like, no, I was like really scarred from those times.
Right. I guess kind of bringing things back to where you are now, which is you're a business owner.
I'm a business mm-hmm. owner.
Yeah. You co-own Serpent and the Rainbow Tattoo,
mm-hmm.
which is on Haywood Road.
Haywood, yeah.
What's the address?
508.
508 Haywood, down the street by DeSoto and across from The Whale and mm-hmm. places like that. Anyway, being a tattoo artist, you're always sort of a business owner in a way. You were always like an independent contractor, essentially.
Totally. Right. Yeah.
As a co-owner, how is it like? How is your that world shifted? Like, have you had to put on this like business brain, or like, are you just kind of?
No, not so much. I wouldn't have done it if that was required.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But you are
because I know I've worked at a lot of shops and I've worked for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I do know running the shop, if you want to be the guy that owns the shop, gets all the money and all that shit, profits from it,
mm-hmm.
you got to deal with everything.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to be responsible for nobody.
Right.
But me.
Yeah.
I'm on my own trip hard,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Hard. Totally.
So the only reason it worked was because it was going to be like a co-op.
Right.
We all own the place. We all split the bills. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, so everything's like quarter to like.
Yeah. It's you and Jeremy.
Jeremy Joachim, Dean Denny, Chris Roberts.
And y'all all kind of have that same mentality about wanting to be doing your own things and not be kind of on the admin side of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've all worked with each other for almost 10 years.
That's awesome.
So it's like, we all like know each other's.
Right.
Bugaboos. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'll give us credit that we communicate.
Mm-hmm. That's crucial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes we get weirded out that like just like months have gone by and like not a drop of drama.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of just like that'll like start to like weird you out a little bit.
Like hold on.
Like literally like nothing has happened.
Maybe the problem is that there's not a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So we just kind of like, you know, we'll just check in. Like, is everything cool? Mm-hmm. But also like, I think most businesses could do this too. Try things. Mm-hmm. Be fluid about things. And if it don't work, you can change it again.
Yeah.
You know, like
totally.
Just like the set in stone kind of, this is the law kind of thing. Like just none of us can deal with that. And it's kind of the reasons we became tattoo artists.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we don't like that life, you know? And I think some way or another, that's why we all got into it, is just kind of, it was a lifestyle, you know? And then you either like get serious about actually knowing what you're doing.
Right.
Because there's a lot of tattooers that don't. And it's a lifestyle where you can just be a fuckhead.
Right.
You know? And be a fuckhead and get a little bit of money, pay your bills, and then go back being a fuckhead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then, like, obviously, or the tattoo world gets a lot smaller once you try to get better.
Yeah. It's probably true of anything, but
totally.
For sure makes sense.
Yeah. So, but I guess, like, when you're like in a non-stressful moment, it's hard to reflect that you're in a non-stressful moment.
Right.
And then, but then I think sometimes that will, you'll confuse that with boredom.
Right.
And I don't think that's good either, because it's not boring. If like,
and I know you don't want to, you don't roll very long with boredom.
No, it's like,
so if that starts to feel boring, then your brain's probably like, wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And again, my weird musical taste, you know, like that's it too. It's like massaging different parts of your brain, or like liking different kinds of art. You know, it's just like massaging your eyeballs a little different.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, how do you then, if you do get to a point where you're like, oh, this is no stress, but you're maybe metabolizing it as boredom? What do you kind of just figure that out after the fact, or are you quick to recognize?
That's when you really start to feel your depression.
Mm.
And I feel like a lot of times, like with my boredom, it's just like, am I just like, sometimes I trip on how productive I am, because I sometimes tell myself, am I just doing this to like not be depressed? But then sometimes I'm like, that's foolish. It's okay to just work hard, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes, but I do have those moments where I find a moment where it's like nothing's happening, and I start reflecting, and then I usually get a little depressed, you know?
Sure.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
No,
I think that's a pretty relatable pattern.
Yeah. Because, I go, like, real hard, you know? It's like every moment I try not to be wasting any moment.
Yeah.
And that really got worse with my sobriety, because it's just like, now I'm really focusing on this, like, real hard. And it's just like, how much longer am I going to be, like, this healthy? So it's like, it was 10 years? I don't know. But it's like, I want to like squeeze every minute out of those 10 years. And I really am, you know?
Yeah.
And it's killing my back. And it really is. But anyways, I frequently have those moments where you're exhausted. It's not there today.
But I've thought about like even just, I know tattooing is physically hard on you, like wears on you eventually. But thinking about even just having to sit with the same person for 3 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot. And I love talking to people. And that's still like, it's a lot to think about that being so much of your life.
And putting your all into the tattoo and not trying to fake the conversation.
Mm.
So it's like, I like even yesterday, I just had a moment where I was just like, I'm just exhausted from talking.
Yeah.
And like the guy wasn't like, he wasn't punching me with like bad questions or anything, but it's just like, I'm running out of enthusiasm.
Right? Yeah.
Which made me start running out of enthusiasm for his tattoo, which is, the guys actually laugh at me because I only tattoo in like 2 hour spurts. Because it's like, I gotta be loving it. And the second I'm not loving it, my mind starts going somewhere else. Like, I'm sorry, this tattoo that could be finished in 6 hours and I could sit down and do it all today, just I can't.
I can't.
But good for you for knowing
that. Yeah, that's awesome, really.
Well, because I know after my mind starts to slip, I'm not going to care what this looks like.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be done, you know?
Yeah,
so,
respect.
But that's also a good thing about being my own boss.
Uh-huh.
So you, it's also like, I let people know, too, this is how I work. Mm-hmm. And if they don't jive with you, I completely am cool with you just going somewhere else. That's also a great thing that there's 500 tattoo artists in Asheville. It's like, maybe I'm not the guy for you. Mm-hmm. And that's completely fine. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
I got other things to do.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, can you imagine if you ever had to have like a normal job with like a normal boss and shit? What would you do?
Man? Oh, I love that. Yeah, what would you if you had to like walk and get a job?
Excel?
You would excel. You're right. I'm sorry I ever doubted you. Yeah.
I mean, I believe that.
Yeah, I think you would too.
I think about that shit all the time. Well, I was a janitor.
Yeah.
It's true.
Had a boss. I loved that job.
Did you?
It was awesome.
Cool.
But, you know, of course, I'm not going to like, you're not like, I'm going to retire doing this. I knew that.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. I had a CD player and a tape man. Mm-hmm. And like, it was.
You find your way to.
Yeah.
To be content.
Yeah.
But I
definitely think about that, though, to like not completely make a joke of your question. I fear that. And that's what keeps me working hard.
Sure.
You know?
It's a good motivator.
I feel mm-hmm. like I could do any job that I had mm-hmm. to do to, like, take care of whatever I'm doing.
But
I'm good. If I keep working hard doing this, I won't have to do that.
Right. You're a true original, JH. Mm-hmm. And appreciate thank you for coming on Stickers.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is great.
Yeah. Thanks again for listening. Once again, I'm Mark.
And I'm Annalise. You can find us on Instagram at Harvest Records AVL and on Facebook and Twitter at Harvest Records. Our website is harvest-records.com, and you can always email us at harvestrecords@gmail.com or just stop by the shop at 415 Haywood Road in West Asheville.
Thanks to Colin Miller, our engineer and editor. Thanks to MJ Linderman and Owen Stone for the theme music, Casey Ellis for interlude music. We will talk to y'all soon.
Sleep.